Welcome to Our Voices, Our Community, presented by Colors Virginia Magazine. Our Voices, Our Community focuses on community issues that include, but aren't limited to, social issues, political issues, and economic issues. And today, the voice that you're hearing is a little different. Robert has turned over the microphone to me, Karen Jones.
The big mic.
Yes. To moderate our discussion today about women. March 8th, we celebrated International Women's Month. And all throughout this month, we're celebrating women's history. So there's no better time or a place for us to use our voices on the issues that are facing women today and our path forward. So I'm excited to have with us today Ms. Catherine Cable.
Hello.
Catherine is always with us and brings a wonderfully unique perspective to the issues that we talk about. And then I'm even more excited that our special guest, Ms. Evangeline Jeffrey, is joining us today. Hi, Ms. Jeffrey.
Hi. How are you today?
Wonderful. And for those of you all who don't know, Ms. Jeffrey served as the NAACP branch president for many, many years and worked tirelessly with the unions here, with Verizon's union, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Here in Roanoke. And so she is a strong community advocate. And so I appreciate you joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And we will miss Robert, Jose, and Will, but I'm sure that they are cheering us on from afar. So, to kind of start our conversation today and highlighting women, I've been struck this week, particularly by the Rolling Stones cover that was titled Women Shaping the Future. And so it's our Democratic leader in the House of Representatives and newly elected women in the House of Representatives, which is amazing. So we are shaping the future. And I wanted to ask you both, who are some of the women that you admire, past or present, who have helped to give you your voice today?
There's politicians and there's people that you remember in politics, but then there's also like those cultural icons. Mm-hmm. So, you know, R.E.S.P.D. you know, how could you not love, you know, all the cultural icons that have given us such great, like, amazing voices. And, you know, one thing that I remember playing in my childhood was In Vogue, and they had that, music video where they're going down the runway and they're kicking up their legs.
Free
and
your
like,
mind.
Yes, Free Your Mind. And I just, that video, I loved it. And there was so much music, you know, growing up in the 90s that was like, you know, Bitches and Hoes and blah, blah, blah. And I just, yes, In Vogue. I love them.
Yes.
It was definitely a different take.
Different take, very empowering, different generations. And I think it speaks to us differently, but then the same in a lot of ways.
And see, that was a younger period. Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit more old school and I go a little bit farther back. Mm-hmm. But the woman that really shaped my life actually was my mother. And she was not an activist, but she was a person who, and I have to say, she was a little naive. Mm-hmm. Because she thought you ought to just love people. And even little mean people, she thought you ought to really just love people. And it kind of made me think about, you know, just your place in the world. And I had an aunt who was very assertive. She thought, you know, you stand for something or you die for nothing. And so she was always prodding along, you know, get your education, do something that makes a difference. And my mom had that quiet tone. Yeah, you do it, but you do it with love.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I always think about just all the shoulders that I stand on, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's my grandmother and great-grandmother, women in my church, but then Sojourner Truth and Harriet
yes.
Tubman. And as we move forward today, I think about Shirley Chisholm.
Yes.
You know, just so many shoulders and people who have done
Anita
things
Hill.
That... We, Anita Hill, yes, Anita Hill.
Sorry, going who, back, that's formative years for me.
Well, right, and yeah. I think when you talk about Anita Hill, though, I think about what my thoughts were in 1992, and where my thoughts are today.
And to stand up during that time.
Yeah, I know.
And
that
make
was an
a statement.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
That was an education on how you would be treated, like not just Anita Hill, but then also Monica Lewinsky and how she was treated.
Yes.
And you know, and even how Hillary was treated, you know, trying to do anything in the White House or, you know, get anything accomplished, and how she was just the absolute, like, you know, fear and hatred that was, you know, poked at her just for trying to get people health insurance. I mean, not exactly a surprise that, you know, that people turn around and hate Obama for giving them health insurance too.
Right. Cause we, how dare us want our people to be healthy.
Yeah. And I admire Michelle Obama. She has grace and poise and a purpose. And she is an intelligent woman, but she is strong enough to stand behind her husband. You know, a lot of women throughout the ages have been taught that they should be submissive. And so they don't strive for anything.
Right.
And that has always bothered me.
Yeah.
You know, I don't mind helping, but I don't want to be the invisible woman who does nothing and contributes nothing.
Right. And, you know, I also think about women who were working alongside their husbands, but then continued to carry on, like Coretta Scott King, Merle Edgars, so many women who said, maybe you ended this, but you didn't end the fight.
Right. Yes.
And I think women were just strong like that.
Right. Yes. And it's amazing how people kind of erased their further work in a way, almost. It seems like they didn't pay as much attention because, you know, of the man's presence was needed to validate it. And once, you know, he wasn't there in the picture every day providing that necessary male face to the activism, that, you know, people paid a little less attention, but that doesn't mean it was any less important.
Right.
And so, you know, one thing that, you know, I'm reminded of is I just read Sarah Brady's biography. And Sarah Brady was the main person behind the Brady Bill. I thought it was named for James Brady. Like, I didn't, you know, even though I know a lot about, you know, gun control stuff, I thought it was named for James Brady. But actually, she was the political power behind it because he was actually so injured at first and recovering and needed so much care that, you know, he did advocate for it. I don't want to say that he didn't do that. He was, he played a major role in advocating for it, but she was absolutely the power behind getting started on that advocacy and then him joining her, not vice versa. Yes. And so she was the major force behind that. And so that was a, you know, that was in, you know, even though he, you know, hadn't passed away, his health, you know, was a major problem initially because he, you know, the gunshot went to the head. And so, and then the other thing I just have to throw in there because my mother would, you know, love this, but her favorite song that would play all the time when I was growing up, which you reminded me of, was "You Don't Own Me."
Oh my goodness.
So that is a classic. And my dad would like sing it to her and like laugh and be like, you know, this is your favorite song. You don't know me. And it just, you know, he would sing that all the time and play it for her and just like, you know, smile and laugh. And, you know, that whole thing about how you don't belong to any man. So.
Right. We're equal. We're equal.
And it took us women a long time to even come to that conclusion ourselves, because we have been programmed so that we take the lower road. And a lot of things that have happened, you just stated how, you know, Ms. Brady, I mean, he couldn't do a lot of stuff. She had to have been the structure and all of the power behind that. But that becomes overshadowed when the male enters the picture. And we don't want to be in a power fight struggle with him, but society really needs to evolve into knowing that women matter.
Women matter.
That's exactly right.
And
they matter.
I think about this, too, because we're here in Southwest Virginia. And how at times it seems like maybe our voices are suppressed a little bit.
They are.
I see women starting to stand up more. I mean, we have politically, we have some great examples. Roanoke City Council is predominantly women. Blacksburg Town Council. We have a Leslie Hager Smith as mayor We also have three phenomenal women on town council. Christiansburg Town Council has a woman. And so we're stepping in to our power in much different ways, I think, than even we were afforded the opportunity before. I think I heard an interview with Klobuchar. Did I say her name right?
Right.
And they asked about being president. And so she commented that, no, she wasn't born into it, because growing up in Midwest, that wasn't even a thought. Yep. But today, wow.
This is the day of the woman.
Yes, it is absolutely the day of the woman.
It is the day of the woman, you know. And we have kind of started a lot of movements. You remember when they had the bloomer movement years ago when women came out wearing bloomers? Well, you probably don't remember. It's a historical thing. You wouldn't know about it. But anyway, they were bringing attention to their cause and to the need to vote. And then they started to wear their bloomers. And that was like a bad thing to do, really, because, you know, you were just out there with those bloomers on. But they brought an awareness to who women are.
Yes. Yes. So thinking about that, I'm kind of going to jump around, and I wanted to talk about, because two things that have been really big in the news are the passing of the ERA and having our states ratify that. Virginia didn't get to be 38th, but there's a possibility with four other states. And my question to you both is, what do you think the impact of passing the ERA will have on us in Southwest Virginia? What will it mean to us?
I think it's gonna be positive. Because we're talking, what, equal pay?
Equal pay.
And hopefully equal status. Because, I mean, women have been doing men's jobs for years. Yeah. And we don't get paid for them, but we've been doing the jobs. And a lot of times, the jobs that men do, the women are the ones that keep them in the job. So, and I don't know if you remember when housewives were considered to be domestic engineers. Oh, they gave us a title of domestic engineers because, you know, we're at home and they wanted us to feel good being at home, cooking, cleaning, and baking. And so we could be confined there and we wouldn't be out doing other things that were considered to be men's work.
Being president of the NAACP.
Being
president of anything, you know. So, you know, it's just good to see that things are starting to change.
Yes.
Because we've been down too long. It's time for us to just rise on up.
Yeah, and the other thing is that it's about, you know, families getting the adequate money they need, because now we're seeing these jobs that are disappearing. You know, robots take all these jobs and that have traditionally been, quote unquote, you know, male dominated. And then what we see left are the care professions, right? It's really hard to automate. Robots have not learned how to wipe butts yet.
No.
So, like, there's a certain,
and I don't think you'd want them to.
They're not great at that. And I mean, you know, when you talk about domestic engineer, right? That does anybody remember the Jetsons, where there was all the robots around the house, right?
Rosie.
So yeah, Rosie, exactly. So Rosie has not appeared, really. I mean, the little vacuum robots they have are apparently not that awesome.
Right.
So sadly, you know, I look forward to the day when Rosie does appear, but you know, so much care work is in the loving care of other people and humans and bodies and souls. And so, you know, as we do this care work, you know, we need our families to be supported. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that people are getting away with not paying, you know, adequately is that this care work that, you know, the teachers, the daycare, the preschool, you know, the nursing, it's not being adequately paid for. And we really, you know, an equal ERA would, I think, help a lot with some of those things as well. So, you know, that we need truly equal pay in the workplace, and that would help push that in the right direction.
And women are head of households.
Properly. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it always was considered that men were head of the household. There's not always men in a household anymore. And women are having to take on the role of being father, mother, and breadwinner, and all of that. Mm-hmm. So they need the equal pay because they're doing an equal job. And let me say, even when men are considered head of household, a lot of them don't come home and do a lot of work once they leave the office.
Well, we need to change that.
Right, so they're not cooking and cleaning.
We need to introduce them to domestic engineering. Yes.
They are not into domestic engineering.
Well, I am looking forward to and listening to the debates. I think North Carolina has an opportunity to pass. I think it just failed in New Mexico, but North Carolina, Georgia, Florida, and then I think there's one other state. And so the ERA is important for all of us. We touched on women now in the workplace and working really hard in doing the work of men. Not the work of men, but
doing the work.
Right. The work. Thank you, Ms. Jeffrey. Doing the work. And we are in the era of Me Too. And
Have we always, though, been in the era of Me Too? Like, this is an old problem, right? So,
it's
now we're talking
new.
About it, right?
Right. So it's not new, but in its framing now, is it empowering?
I think yes, but I think that we have not empowered. We haven't quite reached down to I think all the time about there's clearly a room where in my house where there used to be someone who was a maid who lived in the house and had this basement bedroom, and there's this old basement bathroom, and the bedroom and the bathroom don't connect. And I've been in all these houses in Roanoke where I'll come into the basement and there'll just be a toilet sitting in the middle of the basement. And I'll be like, what is that? Well, that is where they had their domestic help go to the bathroom, just out in the middle of the, there's a toilet, but there's no covering. There's no, anybody could open the door to the basement. I mean, it's unreal how many houses I've been in where I've seen that set up, in old Roanoke houses. I'm just what? And when I finally realized what was going on with that, and then I think about those women's lives and their, you think about who was it? Was it Strom Thurmond, who was the guy from South Carolina who had the child with one of the, domestic worker who was in his parents' household, and she was a teenager.
Right.
I mean, I don't think consent could be fairly given in that situation.
Right.
And so when we talk about folks like that, I still think about, the people who are cleaning your hotel rooms, who are, working in restaurants, who are serving food. And how can you say, hey, don't touch my ass when you need a tip? I mean, we need to change a lot of things about how we structure work and the workplace before we're really, right now we're protecting, if you have if you have 500,000 followers on Twitter, maybe the Me Too movement can truly protect you. But I don't, you think about that server, and I just don't know that the Me Too movement is adequately protecting you. And I mean, I think the Me Too movement does want to do that, but I think what we need is, huge sea shift in policy change where we say, oh, hey, maybe expecting people to get tipped is opening them to sexual assault. And if that's the case, maybe we need to change so that we just pay people a wage when they serve you.
And speaking of that, so Virginia, the legislature actually just passed the law so that these positions like waitresses and bartenders, shoe shiners, who all were making way less than minimum wage. Now, the reason for that is deeply rooted in racism, because those typically, were jobs held by African Americans, so a way to keep us down. But because now that these jobs have to be earning minimum wage, which we know minimum wage is still horrendous, but putting a cap and not making a person's how well they serve and what they do for you, dictate how much they get paid.
And how much they ignore your, you know,
and so Virginia,
horrible behavior.
And have to give kudos to Virginia for stepping up and making that, you know, making that happen.
Yeah, so we need a lot. I mean, we just need a lot more of that.
Right.
So, and I just saw that the only police, the only female police chief in all of Virginia that has ever existed suddenly resigned just the other day. Did you see this?
I did.
It was actually, so brief of a news report.
Yeah.
And it disturbed me that one, there's only been one. Mm. Excuse me?
Well, Radford City right now has an interim police chief who is, she's female.
Knock on wood. Let's get more of that.
Right. And I'm curious about what has happened. I think that's in Portsmouth.
Yes.
That it took place in... I'm not sure of the details, but I'm curious because it was really all of a sudden.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm worried that she's resigning. I'm worried, well, I mean, you know, you never know why someone's resigning.
Right.
If that's, you know, they're on them or if that's like the culture of the department kind of forced
dictated
her into that.
It, right.
Yeah. And so you just don't know. And then, but my broader concern was that she was the only one. How, I mean, you know, Virginia's been around for a while.
Right. 400 years.
And they haven't had the cultural change to make, you know, equality and respect. I think that's a key right there is respect. And with the culture, some of the cultural things that are going on today, you find that there's a lessening of that. Mm-hmm. And I know that's a kind of a starchy thing, respect, when, you know, you do something in a certain way and all of this. But sometimes that kind of helps to teach people the awareness of who you're dealing with and how you're dealing with them. And that leads to some cultural changes sometimes. So we don't need to throw away some of the stuff that, you know, has been substantial for us. And I think respect is one of the things we need to keep.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So thinking about respect and Me Too and shifting our culture and legislative changes, advocacy. Now I'm sitting with both of you guys, and the one thing I know about Catherine and Miss Jeffrey is that, number one, neither is afraid to speak their mind, right?
We talk a lot.
Yes, neither's afraid to speak their mind, but they're fighting. And everything that they do is for the good of all, you know. And I mean, I know that personally about each of you. So women in advocacy, I've been paying a lot of attention to the Women's March, and they've released a woman's agenda, which I think is fascinating and amazing. But what role do we play in advocacy? And how do we empower the voices, though?
Yes.
Because I see you, Catherine, out there. All the time.
With my sign. She's holding up her two hands in the sign of me holding a sign on the podcast. Always the best when you talk with your hands on the podcast.
I know. And I hear Miss Finch in the back of my head, stop talking with your hands, Karen. But that's what I do. But how do we empower women to be advocates? I mean, I see it all the time, but for us to be more vocal, and what do you think are those issues that we should be more vocal about?
Well, you know, some of the issues that are classified as women's issues are people issues. Mm. And we do need, like I say, go back to changing the culture where, you know, we have to educate men, and I don't want to target men as such, but we have to educate some women as well into what things are needed to bring about changes for our future in a positive manner. So, and I talked about respect, but education, you know, getting financial stability for families. Mm-hmm. And that's an empowering thing when a woman can actually take care of her family. Even if the man decides that he wants to go tap dancing somewhere else, we can still empower ourselves to maintain our children and train our children. A lot of times we don't do that. And we need to do that.
We do.
We need to train our children.
We do.
Male. And if we get to our young men and boys and let them know and appreciate women, you know, they know about their mother. They love their mothers, hopefully. and they can continue to grow with that love of womanhood.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't see a lot of that going on. And hopefully we can train men and make them aware of the fact that in being a father and a man, that you also need to educate your young man that admires you, looks up to you, that what he needs to do to interface with womanhood.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That first relationship people see, you know, I go back to, you know, we talked about our moms and we talked about, you know, and I talked about my dad, you know, seeing that you don't own me, you know, that was you know, silly, but it was also a sign of respect. So like,
right.
Hey, I don't own you. Like, mm-hmm. this is your favorite song, because I mean, my mother literally was the first generation that they were allowed and expected to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that my, not expected. My mother was allowed to go to college. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was the first generation of women that really was where that was kind of a more like middle, you know, middle-class men had been sort of afforded that much earlier than a middle class woman. And so, you know, my mom was only, you know, she could only imagine teaching or nursing or something like that. You know, there was no like broader, like you can be anything kind of talk to her. And so, you know, that first relationship you see truly is that relationship at home between and then when you have your own kids, you know, that moment where you have kids and you have to share those domestic responsibilities, and those domestic responsibilities get a lot heavier, is a real kind of like, it's a tough point, right? So I think that, you know, kids who grow up seeing a certain division of labor and how people treat each other at home grow up to have different expectations than kids who see, you know, that mom has to do it all, you know, that dad kind of gets skates out with not much on his plate.
But, you know, I have to give a shout out to my uncle, and he is the reason that I'm really here today, because he was not a educated man, but he loved his family. In fact, he was an orphan, but he had gotten married, had gotten a extended family, and he pushed me to go to school. I had received a scholarship, and I tell everybody about this, and I was supposed to go to a predominantly white college in Illinois, and because I had injured my leg or something, they said I was a liability, but actually they found out I was black, and they said, well, we can't have a limping black woman in college, I guess. But anyway, I got really kind of just distraught about that, and my uncle said, I'm not going to have you sitting around crying over spilt milk. He said, you are going to school. And he set about getting me into seminary.
Wow.
And I went into school with a lot of men and survived, thankfully, through all of that. But it was my uncle. And he said, you know, I'll be right here. And he was there. And that was inspirational to me. And my mom was kind of on the side quietly saying, okay, we got to make sure she's okay. And so I think, you know, if we work together, and we do need to work together, I don't think we are women, you know, fighting men.
Yeah,
we are women trying to include men.
Oh, yeah.
Right. You think about.
And in a good way.
You know? Remind me of a story that my mom's uncle lived with her. So my mom's mother, her brother, my mom's uncle, lived with the whole family, you know, with his sister's family. And he helped pay for part of college. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was, you know, he helped pay for that. I mean, for his sister's house. I mean, he helped pay for his sister's household. And I mean, he was in, you know, an important part of them having the same level of stability and that, you know, I mean, almost like a, not exactly a second father figure, you know, they also took care of him, but, mm-hmm. you know, just an additional person there, you know, encouraging them and pushing them on and giving them that support. It's so important. Mm-hmm. So,
well, and you know, my sisters and my dad raised us. So I'm one of four girls. Mm-hmm. Imagine my dad gets so many props and so many kudos because he raised all four of us to be, to have strong, a high self-esteem. We're all college graduates. He did so much to make sure that we never felt less than, that we knew we were just as good as the next person. Mm-hmm. And so the men in our lives and the relationships that we see are so important in us being able to use our voices, because we see when women's voices are suppressed, what's going on in their lives that keeps that suppression.
And when you talk about that advocacy, one thing I do see with advocacy is that the labor of women is often used by advocacy organizations that where they pay the men to labor for, in a paid position, you know, in some sort of role. But I've seen this changing. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, but I think that's an important change. But the labor of women is expected as volunteers. Work for the good of the community, et cetera, et cetera. And I mean, you know, women are very community oriented and we are driven by that. And so I think that, you know, is both a wonderful characteristic on our part, but then I worry about the sustainability of, you know, an enterprise built on female labor. And I mean, one of the, you know, that is not in any way compensated, or the value of it is not fully acknowledged. And then the quote unquote important decisions are then steered by men who have that full-time role. So they decide, oh, we're going to go after this legislation, or, oh, this is the most important thing we need to be doing. This is our priority in that work meeting. And then the volunteers are told to implement it. Well, no, you know, we cannot be having that. You know, we need to have women at every represented fully, especially if their labor is being predominantly relied on at the grassroots level.
Mm-hmm. And they even had a pay rate for those domestic engineers. And I wonder how many of them actually got paid at the rate that they were claimed at.
what would be the proper rate? Like, I don't know, about $100 an hour.
Yeah. With all the work that they were doing, you would think they would have had twice the salary of the male, but
because
I doubt if they got paid anything.
Right. Well, as a domestic engineer, isn't that like a 24-hour job?
It is.
You know,
24/7. Yeah.
So does it come with good benefit?
And I don't. I guess you get to do a lot of more work.
Oh, well, we all love that more work.
Added work.
So some other issues that I've also been thinking about, because I just read women who are in prison are not given sanitary napkins. And just recently, and this wasn't a Virginia representative or anyone that made this statement, but in another state, he said that by providing those for women, it's as though prison is a country club or something to that respect. Yes. And so women, kind of this idea of degrading that we see, how do we help to fight against those things? Because we look at, you know, do prisoners get rights? Well, yes, absolutely. But would you imagine that they don't get sanitary napkins?
Well, the first bill I would put in would be that all male legislators would not get any, what's the little blue pill that...
Oh, Viagra.
No Viagra. Until female prisoners are given sanitary napkins.
I think that's a good campaign. Yeah. Looks like they're going to get those napkins right away.
Right, they get them like immediately. But I think when I heard his comments, I just thought, how devaluing.
Considering that a luxury.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Because
a necessity.
it's a necessity. It's mm-hmm. a, you know, but I think men, particularly from a certain generation, because they have been taught or trained or culture has taught them that in so many ways women are less than, they continue to perpetuate that. And it's...
And tiring, and also tying that stereotype to the fact that the menstrual period for women makes us so different and so way out there. Mm-hmm. That's another stereotype.
Hysterical ladies.
Yeah, yeah. That we're. And I wonder if those men are on something like that when they're out there doing all that crazy stuff that we're seeing going on.
Right,
erratic behavior and...
I know. We need to start tying. Once again, I'm going to go back to the Viagra. When was Viagra introduced, and when did we see crime spike? We're going to go back. No, I'm just kidding.
Is it that time of month that everything's going awry?
Yield some results. Yeah.
I'm kidding.
I am too, funny. But it's a thought. I mean, I've heard that over the years, and it just kind of incensed me to say, you know, to hear men say that. Oh, she's acting like that because she's having that time of the month. And how do they?
How do they know?
Seems like it's always that time of the month if you're a guy. I mean, who's most of the aggression, you know, really kind of aggressive behavior? Who, you know, it's what we tolerate, right?
Right.
So, you know, it's almost like projection. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, you know, I am going to talk about you with what I'm really guilty of.
Yeah. So true. So how do we work with women in knowing our worth, our true worth? I mean, there's lots of books out there and helping to guide us about knowing our worth. How do we empower, particularly young girls today, how do we empower them to know their worth? And what is worth? Because it's not just money, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's more than that. It's self-respect
and all of
that.
Well, you know, I'm a Christian, so I think this way. Mm-hmm. God made me, and God doesn't make any junk.
Oh.
So start at the root and just, you know, God made me. He empowered me when my mom was able to give me life, and that I'm here. And if you look at me, I can contribute so many things to the betterment of this world. And so if we just start at the root and just tell them, look at what you've blossomed into. And look how wonderful you are. Mm-hmm. And we need to talk to each other about, you know, we need to compliment each other. You know, sometimes we don't think it's important to say a kind word to each other or to observe what we do. You know, if you make an accomplishment, we as women, we should be out there, you know. Look at what she did. Mm-hmm. You know,
celebrate.
Cheers.
Yeah, some cheers. And we can kind of empower ourselves to empower others.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I can't remember exactly, but it was a very highly accomplished Black woman who said that one of the things that really helped her growing up was that her parents told her, and some good influences of her told her that you're exceptional. And you are going to have to set your own goals because no one will adequately tell you. They won't give you adequate feedback. People will either expect too little of you because of, you know, who they see you as, or nothing will ever satisfy them. And they will actually be angry at you for being highly accomplished. Mm-hmm. And so you have to just set your own internal goals because so few people will give you valuable feedback that you have to set your own internal, like, North Star of excellence, and then you go from there. And that's the goal that you have to set for yourself. And I think that sometimes we do have to maybe tell, you know, our daughters and especially, you know, young girls of color that you're going to be facing some hills, and to get over those hills, you look inside.
Right. Yes.
Because the outside world will not be giving you the right feedback all the time. You will be you will absolutely be on a regular basis, be getting the wrong feedback.
Right.
And, you know, other kids who look different might be able to rely on the outside world for feedback, but you can't. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that you said that, and I'm thinking back to a couple weeks ago, an episode of Black-ish really addressed colorism. And, you know, within the African American community, we come in all shades, right? And we know where we can trace that back to, but we come in all shades. And it was really interesting because it was pretty open, honest discussion about how sometimes that dictates where you are. And knowing your own North Star and people feeding that back into you, that no matter how the world sees you, you have to set the standards yourself. And so it was a really powerful issue, episode, because I thought about that kind of within my own life and how it doesn't matter what people see in me. Mm-hmm. I've set, because my daddy raised me this way, but I've set, yep, you know, some standards that I already know I'm going to be expected to be less than, sometimes no matter how hard I work. And so we have to have our own North Star, our own guiding principles.
And we have to see ourselves as somebody.
Yes.
You know, I'm sure you can all relate to the fact that, you know, fat women were considered to be less than.
Mm-hmm.
Except if you go to Africa and you're considered to be more acceptable.
Yes.
Because to an African man in that country, and you're...
Because it shows wealth.
It shows wealth because, yes, you have so much added dimension to your, yes, your body. So, but a lot of cultural things or commercial things have led to some women thinking less of themselves, mm-hmm, you know? We have to run to get our hair dyed because we can't, you're not supposed to show gray. You have to get on a diet so you can't show any pounds.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go and get a tan because you don't want to look pale.
Wow. I gave up on that a long time ago because I just have no retention. I'm not, like a week later, just right back. So I just gave up real early.
Yeah. But it's all those kinds of things sometimes that can pull on the self-esteem, mm-hmm, of people. And you have to just determine what's artificial and where you are. And stay with you as the real person from that inner self.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You are so right, because I think about how media portrays women, mm-hmm, in general, what's accepted as beautiful, whether or not it's good to be smart. And if you, quote, look smart, that could be unattractive. You know, and I think about, I also only had black Barbies. And I tell people this, I only had black Barbies, I only had a black head doll because my dad wanted the things, our toys and things, to reflect us, which I think is really important. But this thing that media does that really attacks women and their worth, because we have this standard of beauty. How do we attain that standard of beauty? Do we? It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. you know, I have to credit my mom. You know, she did not, everybody is susceptible to this, but she, mm-hmm, was less susceptible than a lot of other people. And that absolutely helped me, you know. And I think you talk about your dad making sure that things reflected back to you in your home, that, you know, those early formative experiences of, you know, does your mom, you know, kind of view her own self-worth, or, you know, do your parents view your self-worth through that lens? And I think that to the extent that they don't, and that kind of gives you this, this cushion to kind of defy that outside, mm-hmm, feedback. You know, when you talk about setting your North Star, then you need also to have that like ability to kind of muffle out to have enough internal belief, yeah, in yourself to muffle out those external voices.
Absolutely.
And that are harmful, and still try to let in the ones that are, you know, you don't want to be so like,
right,
so completely, you know, separate from the world that you're not in it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to kind of still, you know, accept in the voices that are, you know, encouraging you on, and also who are reflecting back you know, positively mm-hmm. on you. So,
well, and you know, I think awareness, and I know a lot of people complain and talk about, you know, media and how it's not really good for us. But mm-hmm. in some ways, awareness has really helped. You know, it used to be that if you wore glasses, I mean, you were looked at as a really geek.
Yes.
And nobody ever went behind the glasses to see who the person was because those glasses are standing out there.
So funny story, when I first got glasses, I was a cheerleader and I didn't want to wear my glasses at all. But at a game, I forgot and left them on, and suddenly I could see the whole crowd. And I was like, this is amazing. So I was like, let me get my nerd spectacles and call it a day, because it was good.
Just make them fancier and make them And I did that too. I'm nearsighted and I wear glasses now. But when I was younger, I didn't want to wear my glasses, and I couldn't see anything. I couldn't see from afar, so I was always sitting up front, right at the board.
Perfect.
And you talking about looking dumb? That was just dumb looking. And I did the same thing. Mm-hmm. I finally just said, I'm gonna put the glasses on, and I'm not caring what anybody thinks.
Right. Yeah. Well, Frick Perry put on glasses and everybody thought he was brilliant. No, I'm just kidding.
They really did. Everybody was like, wait a minute.
Everybody was, it was so funny. That was hilarious. He can remember that he's secretary of the Department of Energy, right?
Because he has on his magic glasses.
He can't forget the Department of Energy anymore.
And you can see things, you know, and that's good. But it's those kinds of things. And I know we're making some slight comparisons, but it's those kinds of things that we have to really do for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to do for our daughters and mm-hmm. really even for our sons, because, you know, I hear so much about, you know, teen suicide and bullying and that kind of thing. And that should never happen.
Should never happen. Yeah.
But we've got all these things going on. But it's reflecting that, you know, people feel like they're not worthy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That they would end their own life, and especially a young life like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm having such a fascinating conversation with you ladies today.
Thank you.
Like, I want it to keep going on and on and on.
Robert said no 4-hour podcast. That's what he said before he left.
Oh, yeah. Curses.
No,
we
4 hours.
Still talk. Yeah.
2.5's fine, though.
But I want, as we kind of, I don't like to say wrap it up, because the conversation's always going to continue. If you had one piece of advice to give to a young girl or a woman here in Southwest Virginia, what would that be? What would you tell them?
I would say you matter, mm-hmm. and you can affect the future, and you're part of the future, and you're worthy. You are worthy. You are beautiful. You're worthy, and you are the future. You are the future.
Yeah. Girls around the world, right?
That's right. That's right.
I would say that in Southwestern Virginia specifically, I haven't finished the book yet, but I've started reading this book, and the title is To Live Here, You Have to Fight. And it's about Appalachian feminism. And, you know,
I have to get a copy of that.
Yeah. I'll pass it along if you, mm-hmm. maybe it's at the library too, but you know, I don't know. But I'm happy to pass along too. Mm-hmm. So I am just, that title just struck me. To Live Here, You Have to Fight, because that has been my experience, is that, I've known so many women who are strong and fighters here, I feel like we have this lineage, right, of women to call on, you know, from women who, you know, fought off the coal companies, mm-hmm. and women who fought for, you know, all sorts of equal rights out here, and to stop environmental damage, and to really, you know, when you think about bell hooks and, you know, mm-hmm. all these other women who just have these this unbelievable, you know, strength and fortitude and ability to stand tall and to themselves in the face of people just constantly saying, like, you're wrong. And then history has borne them out. So I would mm-hmm. say, like, to live here, you have to fight, and that's okay.
And we have to unite. Oh. That's another, I mean, you know, regardless of what color you are, mm-hmm. I mean, we have to go beyond that mm-hmm. and just unite to, you know, that's the only way we can make a difference, because mm-hmm. we can't keep looking at each other's color. It's really not going to do too much. It's just going to always be there.
Right.
You might still be pale, and I might still be
always be pale.
I mean, it's not going to, it doesn't affect anything.
Yeah.
We want to affect some things.
Right.
And you got to get beyond all of that stuff, you know.
Indeed.
Right. Yeah. My thing, I want to tell everyone to be unafraid.
Right.
To be unafraid with what life is going to throw at you, and be, like you said, prepared to fight. But to use your voice also in whatever platform you have to use it. Because we're all not going to be out there ready to picket, but we can write a letter, or we can affect someone's life in a really positive way. So use your platform in whatever way that you can do that for the betterment of yourself and the betterment of others.
And I would say to older women, because I can mm-hmm. get in that classification, and I'm just standing up hoorah for the old people,
yeah.
Older women, that, you know, life is not over for you. Inspire some young woman. Help her to reach some goals, you know. That's so rewarding. So, you know, you just need to get out, like you say, get out there and fight. And the fight's not over. So get out there and fight.
Amen.
So, I love you guys. So what's one thing you're looking forward to this week? It's how we always close the podcast, how we always close our voices.
Okay.
So I want to do that. So what are we looking forward to this week?
So the Ignite, the Women's Foundation,
yes.
is having, and now all of a sudden I've like, her name has fallen out of my head. What's my problem?
It's Brenda Younger.
Yes. Teresa Younger.
Okay.
Teresa Younger of the Ms. Foundation.
Yes.
This is a huge speaker, is coming and is going to be speaking. And she has all these, you know, other foundations. I mean, I think she did ACLU mm-hmm. of Connecticut. She was involved with, you know, many other foundations before the Ms. Foundation, but has really come to the forefront there. And just an amazing, empowering speaker. And I'm really looking forward to that on Wednesday.
Yes, and that's on Wednesday.
Yes.
Well, I'm looking forward to researching some of the things that you have just talked about and possibly meeting some of the people that you've excited me about and just finding out more stuff. You know, mm-hmm. just talking with people and just talking with you has been so interesting and informative. So I look forward to doing some more research and learning some more stuff.
The other thing we need to do is we need to get down some stories mm-hmm. of folks who
True.
Know stories, because there is history that you have that we need, like that younger people need to know,
yeah.
you know? So there's
mm-hmm.
so much you can give us. And so we are so appreciative of that.
Oh, and young people have so much too to offer. They have all that energy. And when I forget names, they can plug them in just like you.
Wait a minute. We can't
true,
help you. We
were
really
struggling just now.
has been good.
Yes. Well, I'm looking forward to on Thursday. I am going to Annapolis. Our region of the NAACP, we're having our CRADI training, and that's Civil Rights Advocacy Training Institute. So I'm going to that this weekend. That way I can use my voice. Not that I really have a problem with that, but it'll help.
Even more. Even,
yes, have
even
a platform. More.
I'll have an even bigger platform. So thank Catherine and Ms. Jeffrey. Thank you both. So much.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thanks.
This has
me.
Been interesting yeah. and informative.
Fun.
Good.
We're
has
taking over,
fun.
Robert. Watch
and
out.
Fun. We're going to take over.
Yes.
Here
Just
we go.
Kidding, Robert.
Oh. Well, thank you for listening to Our Voices, Our Community, presented by Colors Virginia Magazine. If you liked what you heard today, leave us a review. Be sure to like Colors VA on Facebook and Colors VA Mag on Instagram and Twitter. And be one of the first to hear Our Voices, Our Community by signing up for the Colors VA newsletter visit our website at www.colorsvamag.com. Thank you so much.